So we're going to go ahead and get started. I don't want to keep anybody, you know, you made the effort to be here and I want to reward you by starting on time. And then Angelica can have the floor and we'll take, or she'll take questions and answers when she's done. So most of you already know Angelica. She is in the Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training Program. She has a degree in dietetics and she studied the culinary arts at Le Cordon Bleu and farms microgreens using organic and permaculture methods. Whoa, I'm struggling, sorry. After plunging into personal health and emotional crisis at the age of 27 and meeting dead ends with both medical and integrative doctors, she decided to take charge of her own healing and enrolled in Dr. Reed Marie's training for practitioners. She has completed Laura Fine's Transpersonal Energy Healing Certification, and she has an online practice where she consults women on gut health and healing suppressed emotions and trauma. So thank you for sharing with us tonight, Angelica. I'm really looking forward to it because your slides are real pretty. I got to see them.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So should I share my screen? Is that how we're going to
go? Right ahead.
Go for it. Okay.
Go for it.
I'm ready. Thank you for the introduction, Annette.
Yeah. And if everybody could like mute, so our coughing and pets in the background don't distract from recording, that would be great.
Thank you. All right, everybody. So the mic, wait, that's not my first page. Hang on. Okay, this is my first page. Okay, so I'm here to talk about the soil microbiome and gut health. You may not think of the soil microbiome in your day-to-day life. I know a lot of us are familiar with our own microbiome, and a lot of us, it's part of our work we're doing here with Dr. Rita Marie. So I today want to help you see the connection between the health of our soils and human health. So that's my goal for today. Okay, we're gonna cover the role of microbes in both the soil and the plants and in the human body. We're gonna talk about the status of soil and human health, the imbalances we're seeing in both the soil and our guts and in our immune system. And then just some solutions, some keys to healing, both on the soil level. And so I'm gonna try to keep these two parallel all the time. I really hope that by the end of the day, you see, it's just like the soil really does mirror, the health of soil mirrors our own health. It's really amazing. Okay, so a little about my background. I was raised on a standard American diet. I came from a family of four kids. My parents are really hardworking, busy, and like we ate like home cooked food every night, but we also had like in our school lunches and our breakfast, lots of processed food, free reign of, you know, the bags of chips and Goldfish and Cheez-Its and bottled dressings and all the stuff, you know? So that's what I was raised on. Around like my early 20s, I got into plant-based diet because I read the China study and it was kind of becoming this big, like it was becoming this big revelation. Everyone's like, oh, we can go vegan and plant-based. And so I definitely cleaned things up. However, by like my late 20s, I definitely came to a wall with my health. Like I just basically no longer was resilient or like could take my health for granted. I had like chronic fatigue for weeks at a time. And I remember like when it started happening, I was like, this is weird. I feel like I have a flu. I'm like, I must have some kind of flu. So I like went to the doctor and I got like antibiotics because I thought, oh, I just must have a bug, right? That was my thinking. But it kept, the symptoms kept getting worse. And then it progressed to major GI distress, gas, bloating, very uncomfortable, pain after eating. Then it progressed more to like just body-wide symptoms. So I didn't know at the time these were all manifestations of gut imbalances, but that's where I was headed after so many years of like living in the fast lane with a lot of the wrong kind of food and a lot of stress. And so I'm gonna talk more about that later. And then clinically, I had, I was diagnosed with a candida bacterial and parasite infections. So after I did testing, that's what I found out was the problem. My turning point was actually pretty recently. So I'm not saying I'm all the way healed, but I decided to move out to Colorado where I am right now, Southwest Colorado. And I decided to move out here to volunteer and sort of intern with a permaculture farm. And they also happen to have a cafe that serves raw vegan food, and they incorporate wild foods into their meals and their cooking. So it's so unique. And I just thought that was so special. And I just had this hunch that I needed to go be more involved in permaculture and eating wild food. And I just had this hunch that it would really help me. I got involved in the microgreens part of the organization. So I grow microgreens. That's me holding a tray of radishes that I planted, radish seeds. And they basically grow, they take 10 days to harvest. So it's like a really amazing way to get fresh nutrients and food in you. So that was really big. And I started touching the soil. And I'm going to talk about how actually like interacting with the soil and microbially rich matter really does help our human health. So I felt like that was getting me, helping me get well, in addition to all the other stuff that we're going to talk about later. So the question of the day is like, what is the axis of human health and the health of our soils? This is like the big question that I just became obsessed with after I started feeling like on some, you know, there was just some signal to my body when I started touching the soil and farming and eating that really nutritious food grown in good soil. I just had this feeling in my body, like it was helping me get well. So I got really curious all of a sudden, like, what is it? What's the science behind this? Why do we need the soil to be healthy and eat food from healthy soil in order for us to be healthy? All right. So the microbes, the soil, and our body. So we're going to talk about the roles here and the role they play in both. Okay, so soil, I love this quote, Eugenia Bone, she is a microbiologist, she's like a fungal expert, like a foraging mushrooms expert. She said, the soil is the planet's gut microbiome. And I love that because it's like, we know our microbiome is so advanced and so complex in what it does for us and our health. It modulates our immunity. It creates neurotransmitters. They control so many things in our bodies. They turn genes on and off. And so like the soil is like kind of playing that role for the planet. It's just instrumental in the health of so many ecosystems. So key concept, microbes make nutrients more available to the plants and to us, the human host. So this is kind of a basic schematic of how microbes basically make it possible for plants to eat. They extract the nutrients from the soil environment. They can basically extract like minerals from rock and they can convert it to something the plant can eat. And it's a symbiotic relationship. That means like the bacteria and fungi and protozoans and nematodes and everything that live in the soil, they give the plant something, the plant gives them something in return. So the plant matter, for example, if you have like dead plants, like weeds or trimmings, you chop them into the soil, the microbes are going to digest them. Okay. And they're going to make all those nutrients available to the new plants. The plants give them back sugars and fatty acids. And then the plants take up the nutrients. And then in the final step, microbes are basically continuing the cycle. You just give them more organic material to break down. And there they go. They create food for the plants. Now, this is just a little basic showing of what fungus in the soil looks like. So bacteria are really important. There are a lot of microbes that are really important, but the fungus are kind of like the really sophisticated ones, I would say, in the soil nutrient cycle. They create these like thread-like hyphae, right? That's how they grow. They grow out these thread-like, when you see mushrooms or we eat mushrooms, that's just the fruit of the fungus itself. It's like just part of it. But really the biggest part of it is underneath in the soil. It's through these hyphae, these threads you're seeing. So on the left, you're seeing soil really rich in fungi. And then on the right, you're seeing not so much. That's probably just a little bit of roots. And so we want to have more fungi. They're like basically a communication channel for the plants. It's really cool. We'll talk more about fungi in a minute. So just to give you an overview of how this cycle is supposed to work, like the way that conventional agriculture is done right now, we are not making use of renewable resources. What we're doing is we're using inorganic compounds, nitrogen-based fertilizers, and pumping chemicals into the soil to try to make plants grow and eat more, when really we could cover it all just with microbes and the smart recycling of organic matter. So compost, you know, we can compost our food scraps and there you go. We're like giving the microbes something to eat and they can give something to the plants and we close the loop. So it is possible to make agriculture really like renewable, and to not, and for it to be like a closed loop process rather than needing to bring in, you know, bring in other materials from the outside. You can also plant cover crops. So instead of, if you don't have like access to enough compost, one really easy solution is to cover your harvested field in a cover crop, like beans, for example, are really great if they have specific nutrients. Chop it down and bam, there you go. You got your organic matter in the soil and the microbes do their work on it. And then you're ready to, basically that's fertilizing the field so you can plant it again. That doesn't happen a lot in conventional agriculture. It's like a simple solution. Instead, we're bringing in chemicals and that's the state of affairs. So microbes help us digest food too. So just like they help the plants, they take things from the soil, they convert them, and they make the nutrition available to the plants. That's what they're doing for us too. So you all know probably by now, we don't digest fiber. The fiber basically stays intact. It's a type of carbohydrate, a polysaccharide, so a chain of sugars that stays intact until it gets to our large intestine, our colon. And then that is where the bacteria ferment it, or that means that they eat it and spit out other compounds that are actually really beneficial for us. So bam, like they, not only are they like, so they're taking what we can't digest, they're digesting it and they're giving our gut cells like short chain fatty acids. So it's an incredible symbiosis, just like the plants share with them. That is food for our intestinal cells, the short chain fatty acids. So we're always wanting to make sure we have adequate fiber in our diet, the right kinds of fibers that our key bacteria would like to ferment so they can create our short chain fatty acids for us. Okay. Key concept number two, microbes protect plants and human hosts. So microbes inhibit the growth of opportunistic organisms inside of us. So they do this by a lot of different mechanisms, but I just named the top three: competitive exclusion, meaning they will outcompete other microbes. So for example, if you have candida in your system, that's normal. We're supposed to have a little bit of candida. And the good flora are basically going to outcompete or make sure that they, those candida populations don't get too high. Because when they get too high, the candida change. Then they're not so nice anymore. They change shape. They can embed into your intestine. They create all kinds of chemicals and byproducts that like make you feel foggy and not good. So that's really important to have adequate good flora in order to keep those populations down to a reasonable level so they don't start behaving naughty. Stimulation of our defense systems. So they are modulating our immune system. They're training our immune system from when we're babies about what to do, what to attack, what's self, what's not self. So, and then continuously, if you are exposing yourself to microbes, they can continuously, and we don't even really know what we don't know at this point, but we know that like they, in very sophisticated ways, that our microbiome modulates our immune response. If we overreact to like something like a peanut protein or whatever, or if we don't react. And finally, they produce antimicrobials against pathogens. So if you do swallow something that's just not supposed to be in your gut, a parasite or a really pathogenic bacteria like Klebsiella pneumoniae or something that you could get in a hospital, right? The good flora are going to go ahead and create chemicals for us, antimicrobials, so that we don't have to ingest something like an antibiotic in a dire situation. So now looking at the plant side, how do they protect the plant, the microbes? Well, they neutralize the toxic effects of heavy metals, contaminants in the soil. This is, okay, so I've seen this in action. There is at the farm where I work, there is a big field that they purchased because the farm had its own land. And then next door was a couple owned basically a glyphosate based fertilizer company. So they were like an ag chemical company and they had a shed full of ag chemicals. Okay. And I think they were using them on their land. A lot of people use like glyphosate weed killers on their property because everyone just wants to get rid of weeds. So eventually over many years, finally this couple moved away and the farm acquired this space now and they had to remediate the land because it had so many chemicals on it and it's an organic farm. So what they did was they created a like fungal tea. So they basically figured out how to create a nutrient rich liquid and inoculated it with fungi. And they've started treating the land with it. And they did this because fungus have the ability to digest and break down and remediate chemicals like glyphosate and any other kind of contaminating things in the soil. So I've seen this in action and it's incredible. And then you test, they've been testing the soil like at different periods of time to see how well they're doing at clearing those chemicals. So really incredible. They also inhibit or kill pathogens. So just like us, the soil can get pathogenic bacteria. Usually if there's something out of balance, right, in the normal community. So they can do that though. They can make it so they can keep everything protected and keep everything in balance. And they help the plants survive in different conditions. So they can modulate how much water the plants take. If the plant is flooding too much water, they can make it so the plant doesn't get over water stress.
Can you hold on a second? Hetty, can you mute yourself, please? I don't have the controls.
Oh, dear.
Hetty, thank
there
you.
There we go.
Sorry, go ahead, Angelica.
Yeah, no worries. It happens. Okay. So yeah, so I thought that was really cool. They can just like plants help us with immunity and basically help us handle our environment, right? They do the same for the plant. They tell the plant, all right, turn this up, turn this down so that you can survive. So really incredible. They're very friendly. The more research I do into this, the more grateful I am for the invisible world underneath our feet and in our bodies. Key concept number three, microbes are literally part of the soil and human integrity. So what do I mean by that? Well, it's just like by now we all know, like structurally, we are mostly bacteria and other microbes. They're everywhere. And this is just a very brief glance of like the major microbiomes of the body, our skin, our mouth, our genital areas, our gut, you know, but they're finding more and more that there's bacteria almost like everywhere. We never imagined that they live. So it's like they are part of your body structure. So it's almost like I look at them as, yeah, they are almost like my Siamese twin in a way, like living with me, on me forever. So that's really just key to know. And then same with the soil. So what the microbes do in the soil is they create structure and they create the right kind of consistency so that you have the right water holding capacity. Super important. If you've ever heard of the Dust Bowl, so the Dust Bowl in America happened when basically they had farmed in such a way that there was no more structure left in the soil. All the topsoil was just became dust because there was no more of that structure, that microbial life to actually hold water. When you have inappropriate soil structure, so on the left here, we've got a healthy soil where you see those clumps, like that's kind of blown up. It's magnified. So you see and understand the concept. The water can kind of go through in little rivulets and it can hold and then like a sponge almost. But then if you have degraded soil, right, you don't have that structure, those clumps, then the water basically just hits it and it'll ricochet right off and it'll run somewhere else. So you just get this really dry, droughty type of soil. Droughty, I kind of made that up, but that's why we're experiencing so much drought partially is because we don't have the right soil structure. We don't have the right microbial life that's making soil and water, the water holding possible. Not a lot of people talk about that though. And the microbial, just a note, the microbial life do this because basically there's constituents in their cells, like the bacterial cells have a kind of, a glue like around it. They have something sticky. So they assist the soil in clumping together and aggregating with like the constituents of their own cells, and the fungus with their hyphae, those threads, right? That also creates some kind of structure. Okay. So now we've did a brief overview. I hope that wasn't too fast. I'll take questions at the end. And that was just a brief overview of like the basic roles and like why bacteria are such a good symbiote with us and with the plants as well. Oh, we got another. There we go. Yay. We got another mute. Okay. The current status of soil and human health. So a lot of us know, because I know Dr. Reed and Marie teaches us all the time about eating organic and how important that is, but I'm just going to go through this anyway, because I think we need to hear it often. We need to know like what our actual, the actual reality is of our soil and the way our food's grown. So here's Earth's story. We started with fertile soil, right? And actually the Green Revolution, or when like chemicals started getting introduced into farming, that followed basically an excess of chemicals that were available after the war. So in the 70s, after Vietnam War stopped, Monsanto was actually in the war industry. It was helping create Agent Orange. Okay. So they had all of a sudden all these materials left over when the war ended. And they're like, huh, what do we do with these? And so what they did was they came up with fertilizers that would help, you know, boost yields. And they that's what they came up with. So they came up with Roundup, you know, their most famous one that has like the weed killing. And they're like, this is going to be our next thing. So they moved into agriculture. Okay. So there was an excess of chemicals, and that was like kind of the eve of chemical farming as we know it. Excess of chemicals from war. And then they were agile, you know, they pivoted into agriculture. So then at this point, farming was still pretty traditional, right? They didn't have access to chemicals. These are expensive, right? And they're patented products. So the average farmer in America didn't have access to this stuff. So then they have normal soil, then they start giving them petroleum-based fertilizers. And what do you know? The yields boomed, everything boomed, and everyone was so excited, because that's what happens when you take fertile, virgin, good soil and give it chemical fertilizers. You're going to see like miracle grow results, and it's exciting. More profits, more yield, more profits. So that escalated into, okay, now we're all incentivized. Let's just grow big swaths of corn and soybeans and alfalfa, all of these things that are generally used for either feeding livestock or for creating biofuel. Most of the corn grown in this country is for ethanol, okay, a biofuel. So it all of a sudden now it was the right business strategy to just do one crop and spray the heck out of it with chemicals and get great big yields. That was the most profitable way to farm. Then, you know, when this happened with the advent of chemical farming, we stopped nutrient cycling. So that slide I showed earlier with how we can just take biomass like compost or cover crops, and we can, you know, we can feed that back into the soil. The microbes can work on it and make the soil fertile again. So what we'd obviously, not obviously, but what a lot of us don't realize is that once you plant in soil, the plants take up a lot of nutrients. That soil is going to be depleted after you harvest it. You got to have a way to return the nutrition back to the soil. And that's what that slide I showed you earlier is supposed to do. We can use renewable, we can use waste basically and recycle it back in. We could return the nutrients to the soil so we keep growing. But that stopped happening with this method of agriculture. So what they would do is they would just go and they put more chemicals and then more chemicals in it. And it basically just depleting the soil until it just couldn't give anymore. And then they let the field lay fallow or just it doesn't produce for a few years. And then they go and, you know, use more land. So this is why we're having such a crisis. And you probably heard we're running out of arable land on Earth because we're doing this. We're not feeding nutrients back in an efficient way. Okay, and then, you know, this kind of created a vicious cycle. Like once people started relying on the chemicals, I think that farmers, they were wanting to get back to that initial boom of where like the chemicals meets fertile soil created this great big yield and more profits. And I think that everyone was trying to get back to that point. But what they didn't know was that the more you use the chemicals, like the glyphosate, the herbicides, the fertilizers, you just keep depleting the soil because it kills the microbial life. So we're stopping the nutrient cycle. We're harming the microbial life that actually can feed the plants. And we were just relying on chemicals. It's kind of like getting addicted to drugs in a way. It's not fixing a problem. It just keeps giving you some sort of maintenance. I talked quite a bit of chemical farming, how Monsanto pivoted into agriculture. They created the organophosphate Roundup. The active ingredient is glyphosate. The US is the top user per person of glyphosate in the world. China and Korea are also up there. Okay. So yeah, and I talked about if you apply chemical fertilizer to healthy soil, you will see an increase in production at first. Okay. This is probably why a lot of these companies have a way of, there seems to be some narratives out there that chemical farming can end world hunger, you know, or like we're feeding people. Probably that is true if you go to countries where they're still practicing traditional agriculture, That's probably true. Like if you give them chemicals, they're going to see this boom, this yield. Yeah. But is it sustainable long-term? Absolutely not. So eventually when we use this method, we stop returning nutrients to the soil. We kill microbial life. The soils degrade and crops get sick, not to mention the harm on human health, which we're going to get into. Just a few notes. I don't want to get too deep into the farming and permaculture and theory here with you, because I know we're here to learn about human health, but just to let you know, like, why these methods don't work long-term. If you use nitrogen-based fertilizers, you're going to get certain kinds of pests from using these fertilizers, okay? And then that creates a need for like another chemical to address the pests, like Roundup or something. So it's like create another problem by starting with that chemical fertilizer. Pesticides, it harms the microbial life in the soil, the ones that make the nutrition possible, and they do so many good things for the crop. It can inhibit plant growth as well, the pesticides. So it kills the pesticides, but it could make your crop smaller or lesser, which is not good for profits. More fertilizer to treat the symptoms. So yeah, once we're seeing low plant growth or pests, it's just like, oh, let's use more fertilizer. Let's just keep pumping it up. And then once you do that, plants and pests grow, they learn to grow resistant, just like humans and antibiotics. If we take them, then it'll never kill all the bugs, just like pesticides won't kill all of the unwanted pests in the field. So what happens? The ones that survive evolve and they become resistant. And then you have to find another drug, or in this case, another pesticide to treat the symptom. And yeah, so then what does that lead to? Well, we've all heard of GMOs and how people are patenting nature. There's a really, what's her name? She's an Indian woman anyway, and she has a farm out in India, and she's an advocate for saving seeds and heirloom seeds, and that you can't patent nature. That's her, like, her line. How can you take a seed and manipulate it to be Roundup resistant and then sell it and like say that you own it? But that's what's happening, because we're just overusing pesticides and we're creating resistant species. So it's just a cascade effect, as you can see. This is a cool quote. There's a common misconception that the nutrient deficiency can only be managed by applying required fertilizers in the field. But most of the time, even after applying fertilizer, plants are not able to attain proper growth. So these methods are just getting us by. They're not even creating like ideal outcomes for these farmers. And just as an aside, before I go on, I don't want to come off as like disrespectful to people who farm for a living. Not in the slightest. The farmers are really brave people. Like, having gone through the Green Revolution, right? Our chemical farming revolution, that's what they call it, the Green Revolution. It's kind of an oxymoron because I associate green with like healthy things. But that's like, so they've been through that. And now like things are just getting harder. You know, weather is unpredictable, droughts, the prices of commodity crops, it's very up and down. It's a very hard career. It's a very difficult way to earn a living. I have the utmost respect for people who are brave enough to grow food. And a lot of them acknowledge that the system is rigged for depending on chemicals and certain companies, you know, that have patented the solutions. So they know that. I'm not saying farmers are wrong by any stretch. I think they're great. Okay, so just a little bit about, so we talked about imbalances in the soil, how that all works. I want to touch now again, we're going to go back to our bodies and the human body, and I want to show the parallels. So we're seeing a massive gut immune and nutrient imbalance in the industrialized West. I'm learning more and more that a big root cause of that is glyphosate exposure. Just so you know, there's like 70% of rainfall tests positive for glyphosate. I think like 70% of air as well has glyphosate. So even if we're eating organic food, we're still getting exposures, okay? And I just realized the other day, I'm like, wow, if I'm eating something with like erythritol in it, right? I'm eating some keto chocolate. That's what I was eating. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, if that's not organic, that's a corn derivative. I'm probably getting a lot of glyphosate. So that was kind of an aha for me. So yeah, we're exposed to the chemicals, the byproducts of conventional agriculture, and the way that we're farming, destroying microbial life, not recycling nutrients in the soil. We are getting lower nutrient food, particularly lower minerals. The microbes make the minerals available to the plant. Okay. So I feel like when I go to Europe or other countries, I just like almost within a couple of days, I feel this elevated level of wellness. And I attribute that to getting more minerals personally. So because they have at least the EU, they've banned glyphosate use. So, you know, just something to think about. We're also getting micro exposures every day to environmental toxins, just everyday chemicals, BPA, off-gassing VCOCs from VCOS or what do you call them from our furniture, like you name it. We have synthetic materials all around us and they're like, you're off-gassing or we're absorbing them through our skin, we're breathing them. So and a lot of these things get away with being safe because they've been studied at just like the toxic dose in a lab, but it's like the micro exposures that accumulate over time. That's the insidious part. So we're getting exposed to those daily. We're also nuking our microbiome. So the glyphosate exposure, even if you eat organic, like I said, there's a pretty good chance that you're still getting it in your gut, which is the same thing to the soil. It like destroys microbial life. We have antibiotics in our food system, in our the way we raise animals. So if you're getting any kind of conventional dairy or meat or animal products, you know, getting antibiotics indirectly or eating them, just getting them in as medical treatment or overusing them. Like I used to overuse them. So that's all I knew. Lack of exposure. So we're living indoors a lot more now. I didn't realize until I started working on a farm and working with soil that you actually can enrich your own microbiome by touching more things that have a microbiome, like soil or just nature, plants, your pets, other children, like at a playground, touching other children. Exposure is actually really good. That's what makes us resilient. We need diversity. More than anything else, we need diversity in order to be resilient. By resilient, I mean for our immune system to know what to do. Okay. So I talked a little bit about this, but agricultural outputs influence our health. And I said US is a big user of glyphosate. It disrupts our microbiome. Yeah, we talked about all this. So there is another way. Yay, I'm getting to the happy part. It's not all gloom and doom. Okay, just give me a moment. I want to make sure my computer is charged up because it's been giving me a little trouble. It's just a moment. Maybe if I hold it like this. I'm having issues with a charger that is unruly and doesn't like to charge my computer, but okay, I got it sorted.
Other than Angelica, those of you that you've joined in late, can you mute yourselves, please, so we have less distraction? Because this is really good. Thank you.
Thank you. So, beautiful picture of a forest. For me, the forest is like the template and inspiration for how we could build a permaculture, or by permaculture, all we mean is a system of growing food and creating soil that mimics nature's perfect balance. Nature's got it figured out. So I'm going to show you a little bit more what I mean by that. All right. So this is a quote by a Korean natural farmer. This is a particular method of permaculture that I'm very, very interested in. It's very interesting. I'm not going to go into depth, but it was founded in Korea. And what these people started doing is they started finding a way to culture microbes from their environment, like on the outside of a fruit that grows wild or plants that are growing wild. And they culture them in such a way, and then they put them into, create their own input. So create their own fertilizers or inoculants for their soil. Very, very fascinating stuff. And I hope that this becomes a lot more in the mainstream very soon. How is it that the trees in the mountains grow into giants without people fertilizing them? Nature's land always works toward fertility and manages to sustain life, whereas human cropland will turn rich soil into desert. This has happened in a lot of places in the world, right? The Amazon, Africa, a lot of these places used to be very fertile. And now they're like desertified. Desertification is where the soil's depleted. It's turning into dust. There's no nutrients left. A drought, that's desertification. And it's happening everywhere around the world. So just some little, you know, questions that might be coming up. Don't we need chemical farming to feed 7 billion people? This is a common assumption. Well, here's the thing though, it's not sustainable. We've already touched upon this. We're depleting our underground water because our soil has no more structure and integrity because we're destroying microbial life. We're losing topsoil. So that's the top 4 inches of soil. That's like the basic, that's like the nutrient rich stuff we really need to grow. 75% of rain and air contains glyphosate. That's not good for human health. We can't keep going like that. And we're creating greenhouse gases with this method. Why not? Microbes actually can help sequester carbon. So pretty amazing. If we have more microbial life in the soil, we can successfully sequester more carbon. Yeah, but organic farming is expensive. Okay, so I actually don't have a rebuttal for this. This is something that actually we really need to work on. And I'm going to kind of leave this almost as like a, this is our task really in society, is to like figure out how can we make organic farming accessible to all, organic food accessible to all. Because here's the thing, it's basically following the same principles as conventional farming did, right? So like in order to get certified organic, it's very challenging. You have to like go through rigorous testing. You have to pay $4,000 per acre to maintain organic certification. That's a lot. Like small farmers can't do that. And so what's happening is like the people who can really make it in organic farming, they're getting really big and they're kind of developing the same habits as like the big agriculture in the conventional side. You know, they're using organic fertilizer rather than, you know, reusing and nutrient cycling in a way that's more sustainable, right? They have to buy really expensive organic certified fertilizers. So it's sort of going down the same slippery slope in a way. Traditional methods like using compost and like, it's really complicated and difficult to maintain organic certification and do these traditional methods. A lot of them are banned or they're just so rigorous about their standards that farmers don't do it. So it's becoming, that's why organic farming is so expensive, because it's only like the big people that can, the big ag that can afford to do it and stay certified, which is what consumers, that's what we're looking for, right? I mean, I know I'm looking for certified organic when I shop. So knowing this, so knowing that we can't keep going conventional and that organic food isn't a reality for most people. You know, I was in Walmart the other day and I was looking at what people buy. Really fascinating, by the way. Go to Walmart and see what people are buying. And it's just a lot of processed food. And I was starting to get judgmental as like a nutritionist. I'm starting to get all judgmental. And then I thought, I'm like, wait a minute though. This is real life. This is real life for a lot of Americans. There, people might be earning like, you know, an hourly wage and they've got children and like they can't afford organic food, even though Walmart does have a little organic section. They have a lot of organic products in their grocery aisles. Like that's not reality for most people. So the organic route isn't necessarily sustainable either. We can't move forward the way we're going. So what do we do? So the goal is not to sustain what we have going on. Sustainability implies we're just going to stay, we're going to kind of stay the course of what we're doing. But what we need is we need to give back to this land. We need to regenerate the soil. We actually have to give, like, create an environment where microbes can thrive again. We need to do, you know, we need to get the nutrient cycle going again. We need to get a closed loop waste and the growing cycle going again. So we need to be regenerative. This is the buzzword now. What can we do to be regenerative? So we're going to totally change the paradigm with regenerative farming. Instead of competing with nature, with chemicals, pesticides and stuff, we're going to partner with it, right? So we're going to use more natural solutions. What's in a forest floor? What makes a forest thrive, right? What principles can we borrow to make our own farms thrive and help them be profitable? Because they need to be profitable to keep going, right? Instead of disturbing the soil with tilling, which actually they do that to destroy weeds, but it actually destroys microbial life and all that fungal network that I talked about that's so healthy and good for the soil. So we got to get to a protection, a more of a no-till and like protective method. And so that's going to take some new techniques, right? Because tilling and getting rid of weeds is very much a wham-bam solution. Monoculture, so planting just swaths of corn, soybeans, canola, or rapeseeds and canola oil, alfalfa, you name it, all those top, big ag crops. We got to go to diversity because the soil gets really depleted if we just plant one crop over and over with chemicals and then let it go fallow. We've got to get more diversity going. And again, this is says reductionist. I call it like the allopathic approach to farming. It's like a this for that. Oh, we got a pest here. Here's a pesticide versus holistic. Oh, we have a pest. Oh, wow. So that must mean like our microbiome of our soil must be imbalanced. Like, let's address that. Oh, that must mean like, our soil structure is not good. Let's address that. Like it takes addressing a lot of different factors to make the soil healthy. So finally, I've been giving you guys a lot of knowledge about permaculture, regenerative farming, but what can we do? Like, what can we do? Because we can't all farm. We can't all farm, and we might not all even have a farmer's market or a good like grocery store near us. So what can we do? Well, to be regenerative, we have to be a little more flexible with what we're eating. Clearly, if we are like always demanding blueberries year round or peaches or, something that's very seasonal year round, that's going to lead to, if we have a demand, that means that there's going to be a business that will meet that demand. So that, leads to just not only needing to export things, but having to use unnatural forced methods to meet consumer demand rather than just obeying the cycles and seasons and eating what's in season. So if you can be a little bit more flexible and not always go to the store and pick up every single item you need for your recipe and be a little flexible, that's big. Lean into your local farmers. Even if you don't have a farmer's market, or even if you're in winter, like here, we don't have an outdoor farmer's market. We have an indoor one, but you can contact farms. Like, you can get a list of local farms, and I'll give you resources later. Call them, and like these small farms, they are happy to like provide food for you. So it's like easier to eat local than you think. And there's numerous other bigger platforms on the internet that can make locally regenerative agriculture food available to you. So we'll go over that. You can sprout seeds, right? So you can make the food that we have. So we already see that there's an issue where we don't have a lot of nutrition in our food, or as much as there could be. So you can basically up the nutrition in your food by manipulating it certain ways. We can ferment, right? Creating great microbial diversity and different nutrients in the food, right? You could sprout seeds, which makes nutrients appear that didn't exist in the seed at when it started. And you could grow microgreens. I hope later, I actually thought of it today, I would love to do a kitchen show where I show people how to plant microgreens and how to like use them. So I hope in the future, Dr. Rudemarie will let me do that so I can show you guys. It's really easy. And finally, if you can find a way to close that nutrient loop and give back your food scraps so they can be recycled back to the soil, that can help so much, right? We just like anything we can do to support regenerative farming is really good. Okay, I want to show you guys this real quick. I thought this was super interesting. This is a BRICS refractometer, which is like a fancy Scrabble word. But what this is a very new device that a man, I don't know his name, but he started a nonprofit called the Bionutrient Food Association. If you become a member, and I think it's like a small membership fee, and it's all about empowering farmers to be regenerative. It's all about soil health. This device helps you measure the nutrient density of your food right in the store. So you can go to the farmer's market, your grocery store, you could start picking your food based on if it has enough nutrients in it for you. You could compare them to one another. I think this is incredible because this is going to empower us as consumers to say, oh, nope, I'm not going to buy your apples this week because look, they have like 50% less nutrition than this one. So I think this is incredible. And I think that us having this awareness will help shift our demand towards people who are farming more nutritious food, which can only happen if you have nutritious soil, healthy soil. So I really like that. I just listed some resources here to be more regenerative. There's some Eat Wild and Fed from the Farm. and CSAs, local harvest CSAs. These are just methods to get food from local people as close to you as possible. Like if you live really remote, like maybe they won't be super close to you, but still, like the point is that you're sourcing from people who are growing food and raising animals the right way. You know, they don't have the money to afford maybe organic certification, or they don't, you know, they're not like selling in grocery stores. They can't afford to do that, but like they can't, but they're, that's why they're growing things the right way without chemicals, because they can't afford to compete with the big organic guys. So it's just super powerful to just plug back into small farms and food producers who are doing the right thing. Farmer's Footprint, I included that there because Dr. Zach Bush, MD, is an incredible inspiration for protecting soil. He helps farmers. He's also a medical doctor. He also has a biotech company, and he just created a product, which I don't know the name off the top of my head, but it's designed to help bind glyphosate in our bodies. So he's doing incredible work. Farmer's Footprint is his organization. He's really inspirational. Okay, I know we only have a few more minutes. I'm gonna kind of wrap up. Finally, I wanna talk about, so all of this stuff I've mentioned, being regenerative, paying attention to where you source your food, you know, thinking about sourcing the food now, not just in terms of, oh, what foods are on my allowed list, but like what, how much can I, the quality of my food, how can I source food based on quality and who's treating the soil right? That's how I'm thinking now. And I never used to be like that. You know, I was just very much like, I need this, and I don't care what it takes to get it, because that's our mindset, right? We have access to anything all times of the year. But I want to urge you and invite you to like start thinking about sourcing your food in terms of what's the most nutrient dense option. Use that tool, the thing I showed you. And like, did this farmer do the right thing by the soil? Like, was this grown in rich soil, rich in minerals and microbial life? Every time you eat a different plant, like a romaine lettuce versus a butterleaf lettuce versus a mixed green, you're getting a different microbiome. The microbes live in the tissues of the plant and on the surface, of course. So like when, you know, so it's just, I'm thinking of my food now in such different way than I did like 10 years ago when I was in my nutrition degree and I thought I knew everything about nutrition. Oh baby, I knew nothing. So in the meantime, until we start really reversing our soil depletion and our soil health issue on this planet, what can we do to take care of our microbiome, our immune system, and our nutrient balance? So I always recommend, a lot of us have done functional testing. Like that for me in my health journey was the only way I started moving forward. When I saw my stool test and I saw the composition of my microbiome, I saw what the imbalance was. That gave me something to go off. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Now I know what to do. Now I can go and, you know, follow a treatment plan or a protocol to bring restore balance. So that's super crucial. Check the status of your microbiome. I think it's, or, and you can also accomplish this by an oat test, which measures metabolites of yeasts, bacteria, just has different markers on it, but it's also a very useful diagnostic tool. Also food intolerance testing. I cannot tell you enough. I think food intolerances are because we have massive issues with leaky gut in this country. And I think a lot of our leaky gut comes from not only like the wrong food, but I think basically the root cause is we don't have a diverse enough microbiome and we are exposed to glyphosate. I think those are probably the top two and other toxins. I think those are the top reasons why we're all seeing such bad food sensitivities. But while you're trying to heal and restore your microbiome, fix leaky gut, you do need to, I think it's wise to look into food intolerance testing. So Cyrex, Vibrant Wellness, that labs like that, you gotta eliminate the foods that are currently triggering your immune system in order to heal. So I wanted to mention that because that's been a big part of my journey too, is like, I've done a lot of my work on the microbiome level. But if I don't address the inflammation, like if I keep exposing myself to inflammation, my microbiome is not going to maintain balance. It'll just go back to wacko. So yeah, food sensitivity testing. I'm a big proponent of that. Reduce your exposure to the foods. We mentioned this, like, you know, determine which ones are causing an issue. And a lot of you are doing an elimination diet with Dr. Rita Marie. So yay, we're all working on this. And really pay attention to those micro exposures to daily toxins, the synthetics that are all around us, okay? consider the sources of your food if there's glyphosate involved. Create a friendly gut, create a gut environment that supports a good microbiome. So we've all learned healthy digestion and lifestyle protocols in order to help our digestive organs just work right. Like taking bitters, relaxing, doing heart math. Like we know all this. And that's going to help create an environment or a terrain where your microbiome can hold and it can keep you healthy. Expose yourself as much as you can in nature to the diversity in nature of the microbes. Like touch plants, touch soil if you can. Like just exposure is really good. And for the love of God, just try not to overuse alcohol hand sanitizer. Please. And then I also mentioned, you know, if you can't like just get on top of the like sourcing local high, you know, nutrient dense food right now from like local or smaller producers who are using more traditional methods of farming, just try to find ways to make your food more nutritious. You know, the microgreens are excellent. Like in that little shoot, you've got a bajillion nutrients that you don't find in like a mature leaf of lettuce or something. So sprouting seeds, soaking seeds, germinating and soaking things. Just, these are just little hacks we can do, and fermenting to just take the food we got and pump it with more, full of more nutrition. So that's all. Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm glad I'm in and under an hour. I will take questions.
You're good. Cause you know, it's a 90 minute call.
Oh, okay. Cause Dr. Rita Marie said today it could be 30 minutes to an hour. Okay.
Yeah, no, but the call, we set aside 90 for the call. So
Wow. Okay.
And it's great. I knew I'd like it more when you were talking. They announced who's the biggest farm owner in the U.S. Did you hear?
Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Sadly. I haven't looked into that. I'm careful with the news that I dip into because I just don't want it to bring me down. But yeah, I'm very curious about that. What's going to be the outcome of all that? We'll see.
We can hold good thoughts. Thank you. That was great. And you're right. Looking in people's grocery carts is so enlightening.
Oh my. Yeah. And also like it like opened my heart a lot because I realized like, wait a minute, I'm not the norm. You know, we're not the norm in this community. Like I'm thinking of how can I get more nutrients in and what kind of soil is my food grown in? Most people aren't thinking that. They're just trying to get by, stick to a food budget. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it can also be a good way to start a conversation. I used to be I used to do store demos and I did Vega, the protein mix.
Oh yeah.
And we were trained to look in people's carts. And it was like, if it's processed foods, don't even talk to them because they're not your people. Mm-hmm. Your people mm-hmm. are going to have the produce. Their cart's going to be all produce. Mm-hmm. And this one woman saw me staring at her cart. And she was full of processed food and she came over and she started talking to me and we got on the topic. I said, well, you really don't have any food in your cart. She's like, well, it's full. I go, no, you don't have real food. I said, you know, pick anything up in your cart and start reading the ingredients. Can you even pronounce them all? And it was a very nice conversation. You could tell she learned a lot. She didn't change what was in her cart, but mm-hmm. she kept looking back at me every time she passed. So I know, no pun, I planted a seed there. It's real enlightening to read. And I like when the cart's real full, but they hang the sodas off the side. So anyway. Yeah,
lots of sugary beverages at Walmart. Yeah. That was a theme. lots of chips and sugary beverages. That was
and frozen TV theme. Dinners.
That too.
Pizzas. Yeah. So let's go ahead and open up for questions. You can either unmute yourself or raise your hand. If you put it in chat, I'm happy to read. Can we still compost non-organic food since it is not nutrient dense?
Yes, so you can. So the non-organic food still has nutrition in it, even the scraps, right, when we're done with them. So yes, that can go back into the nutrient cycle of the soil. But the thing is, by doing that, we're introducing the inorganic compounds that were used in the growing of that food, and we're recycling it back to the soil. So that's the unfortunate thing. But in a sense, yeah, it's good to be closing that waste loop and doing something renewable with the waste rather than just letting it sit in a landfill where it just creates greenhouse gases. So difficult, but I would say yes, we should be composting everything
whenever possible.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments?
I have a question, Angelica. Okay. Great hey, presentation. Martha.
Hey, thank you.
I have a lot of friends that are into the hyponic gardens, mm-hmm. and so that is a no soil garden, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. they are using seawater. Is that a good alternative?
Yeah, look, like there's good, better, best. I still think, I haven't looked too much in the hydroponics. I have looked at aquaculture a little bit where people basically have ponds of fish and they like, they feed plants basically suspended in water and the fish create, I guess they poop in the water and they create the right kind of material to feed those plants. So I don't know about the hydroponics though, which is where there's no, animals involved. It's just yeah, water, no soil. But here's the thing: I think that if you, the more that you can get freshly picked produce in your hands, the better. I think like the nutrient balance is kind of like priority number one. We need more minerals in us. We need these nutrients. Like we're all supplementing like crazy. I mean, how sustainable is that? So I think anything you can do to get like fresh cut produce in your body is positive. And maybe. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, they always have beautiful towers of lettuce and
right,
and they don't have to weed. So I try yeah. to just in my garden, but it's a lot of work, and a lot of times there's more weeds than there is the actual produce. So that's why I'm asking. I'm thinking, well, maybe I should switch to that, and then I can go at least clip some arugula and lettuce, and at least it's homegrown.
Yeah. And I think that's a great compromise because it's like, then, you know, you're empowered to have some of your own food right there in your household. And then there's people who have made it their career and their livelihood to create healthy soil, grow food in healthy soil. So I feel like just we have to be willing to take multiple approaches to food sourcing to be healthier.
I'd like to add to that.
Yeah.
Look for a local CSA. I mean, that's extremely helpful where you can have always a weekly, some produce, whatever is being harvested that week in addition to your own garden. I found that terrific. You know, you signed up usually in the springtime, you get a share or a half share depending on how big your family is. And that's fabulous because you're always going to be getting fresh cut vegetables. And that's fabulous.
Totally. I love that idea. And the thing about the CSA too, and I talked about flexibility, it does require a little flexibility because you're going to get what's in season and what's local in your area. So you might get foods that you're like, oh, I don't buy that at the store, like beets, that'll spike my blood sugar. But like, I think that it's important for us to widen a little bit, be a little more flexible. Maybe there's some days where you'll go off of your plan and you'll just let yourself have an abundance of locally grown produce. I think that's like a really balanced way of eating.
Can you talk
about health goals? Yeah, go ahead.
Can you talk a little more about the Bricks refractory tool and how you use it and how much it costs and that?
Yeah, so I just heard about this from one of my mentors in Korean natural farming, and it wasn't available to the public till very recently. On the website, I've given Dr. Rita Ree's team these slides, so I hope that you guys will all have access to the slides after this is all processed and posted on the site. So as far as I know, there is a nonprofit organization called, let me look at the slide again, it's the Bionutrient Food Association. So this is like advocating for regenerative agriculture and soil health. And if you become a member, and I think you pay a monthly membership fee, then you can get this tool. I think that's the model right now, is if you go on their website, you can figure out how to get the tool. But yeah, I just think this is so awesome to be able to test on the spot, like if your food is.
Okay, so that's all new to you right now.
It is. I haven't personally used it. I heard about it in August and I've been messaging my teacher. I'm like, give me the source for that thing. I have to share it with my community because I thought this community might love that.
No, I like it too, because you're right. You really don't know how, especially in the regular supermarkets, even though it's called organic, you don't know how fresh it is.
Yes, that's the thing. I know. And I think because of the way organic is going, because of the how expensive it is to become organic, I think, that's going to be, this tool could be such a game changer when we see, oh, my organic produce isn't that great. And then go to the farmer's market and test, be like, wow, that produce is like off the charts. Like, I think that'll really help change people's buying decisions. So,
yeah, I'm going to research that more myself. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, me too. I want to get my hands on one. Hi, Denny.
Hi. You know, I wanted to ask about that tool because I just throw this out there. I come from an orcharding family, and bricks usually indicate sugar, and you indicate the ripeness by how many bricks a piece of fruit has or whatever you're measuring, but it always requires you to slice into it. Like you can't. So would a tool like that, is it anticipated that you would take it into a grocery store and put it into a piece of fruit or vegetable to...
I don't think so, because that wouldn't be like, that wouldn't be a good practice for the store. They have to sell their produce. So I haven't used it, but on their site, they do say like, bring it with you to the store, the farmer's market. Like they do say that. So I think in order for them to sell it like that, there has to be some way that you're not harming the actual produce to test it. So
yeah, I'm curious. Yeah, because I'm like with anything, when you're measuring something, you have to have a piece of it, or you have to, especially if you're doing the chemical content of it. So I'm really curious. I mean, I think that whole idea is fantastic. I'm just wondering if you have to buy a piece of something and kind of take it in the corner and check it, or whether what's your way.
We can't do that. That wouldn't be nice to the grocery stores, but so okay. I will look into it more though. I need to figure out how to get my hands on one.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, just really cutting edge, so super exciting. Okay, someone had asked in the chat about the bricks thing. So I hope we answered your question there. I did give the website source. I could take the BioNutrient Association site right now. BioNutrient Association. And I'll drop it in the chat.
That'd be great.
So anyone else have questions about like the human health side of microbiome or gut health? Because I know that, you know, this was mostly focused on like regenerative farming and food, but also I wanted to like share the floor to anybody who has like pressing questions about gut health, because I have a super long history of working on my own. And if I could support in any way.
If you put that in the chat, it didn't come through.
Oh yeah, pull it up. There we go.
Because Martha's asking.
I just really love these people who are creating these organizations that are getting, you know, spreading awareness, like getting the word out, helping farmers. These people like this are trying to help conventional farmers still be profitable and still earn a living, but go back to like traditional regenerative farming. I just think it's like God's work, in my opinion. I'm actually about to go work on a farm for a season. It's a greenhouse actually, because it's winter right now and I'm going to Oklahoma, and I'm going to be using a lot of really cutting edge techniques, inoculating the soil with microbes, and I'm really, really excited. So
I think that one of the biggest challenges with that is I think farmers and orchardists have been led to believe they can't have both.
Yeah.
You know, that there's this atmosphere of if you go organic, then there are people who are dead against it because they say that the yield and it's crazy and there's no way you can do it, versus the people that really have the science that can prove to farmers like that you can go organic and, you know, do great things with it. And that message just seems to be convoluted by just all the, you know, the dogmas that are out there.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you have this background and that you know firsthand. that dilemma of not being able to step away from the conventional chemical method. I don't know what method that, you know, you were exposed to in your life, but just it can be hard to get away from that.
Yeah. And not that I think I absolutely think that it should be happening. There's no question that that should be happening, but you know, I'm like the sole person in my family, maybe one other person that, you know, would say we need to go this way without, and they always come up with strange arguments. You know, one of the things that happened on the orchard I grew up on, or basically grew up on, was nitrates penetrated the soil or penetrated the water supply, and it was all fresh well water everybody got. And so they had to put water, water dispenser. Everybody's home had a water dispenser, you know, like they started having to buy water. And you can't believe the negative talk that it was all the government's fault. You know, this was crazy. Even though there had to be a warning for anybody on the ranch that was pregnant, they couldn't drink the water. And yet it was still, it was all anti-government kind of talk. And so right when you have the analysis there in hand, and instead of the idea, how do we fix this? It was somebody else, the blame was going on whoever discovered it. And it's unfortunate.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. Hmm. Yeah, it's that holistic perspective we really need to have. I would love to understand more about the economics of all of this, how a farmer who's barely eking by growing, like, you know, corn or soybeans or something and getting subsidies from the government. I don't understand the economic impact of moving towards regenerative agriculture, but I presume that it'll probably take some time, like a few years. So it's like you can keep hobbling along, kind of like with our health, right? We can keep hobbling along with symptom suppressors just to feel okay, mediocre. Or we could do what Dr. Reverie teaches us, and we can address all the systems of our body and try to work from multiple angles to get well. And I think it's probably going to be the same with the farming. It's going to take time, but I do believe long-term that if we get the microbial diversity back in the soil, we figure out how to recycle our nutrients, I think we can get better, you know, than what the chemical farming is doing. Because it's diminishing returns. It was good in the beginning. That's why everyone was so excited. And then it's diminishing returns. So you have to get to a new standard.
Angelica, you should watch King Corn if you haven't. You would like it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
It's a conventional corn farm, and two guys go and they buy an acre, or they rent an acre. And mm-hmm. then they do different, they grow differently than the farmer. It's a fun show. Catherine has her hand up. So if you want to unmute Catherine, go ahead.
Oh, you're on mute, Catherine.
Hear me?
Yeah.
Can now.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Angelica, for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Really interesting stuff. I wanted to make sure I was understanding something correctly. So, I've been, you know, doing organic food for, you know, what, 3 years or something. And, you know, I haven't been to a grocery store in more than a year. I get everything delivered.
Okay.
Either imperfect produce,
yeah.
imperfect foods, or through a local food, like, you know, growers, you know what I mean, growers association.
Cool.
And your comment about, you know, how organic is so costly to get certified. I know that's a problem with my local farming kind of farmers thing. And, you know, they've said to me that, okay, not everything is organic, but everything fits with our kind of mantra of an approach to growing food. So in reading that, is that the same thing as like the regenerative idea that you're talking about? What kind of questions should I ask them?
Yeah, totally. Great question. Yeah, I would ask them about how they like nutrify their soil after a harvest. Like, what do you tell me about the nutrient cycle of your soil, or tell me about how you rebuild soil after you harvest. That's like very telling. Like, oh, we're planting cover crops, or oh, we make this compost, or oh, we make a compost tea and we inoculate our fields. Like, that's all great signs that they're putting biomass back in the soil for the microbes to make it fertile again. Or if they're actually inoculating with microbes, that's really great. That's like where I would start. Ask them how they're actually making the soil fertile again or building the soil again. And then you can ask what they use for pest control, if any, or like if they use any herbicides or weed killers. Because sometimes when people are, even if they're like small farms, like they still have things they could be using. So you're just going to want to find out like what's the level of intervention there that they need to use with their sprays. So I think those are two good places to start.
Great. That's really helpful because their offering of true organic foods is very limited, but they're the ones I'd like to support the most because they're local and everything is only in season. Yeah. And then totally. If I could ask one question, which is about very different, which is more the, the gut microbiome. You had in your list of conditions that you had experienced in your life, you also had anxiety and depression in there.
Yes.
And could you just say a word or two about the link between anxiety, depression, and the gut microbiome? Because I've noticed, like, I've been in complete sugar crave mode for like the last week. Mm-hmm. And I think it was driven by emotions and by depression. And then, you know, I eat the bad things, and then it's like it gets worse. But is the depression getting worse because, well, it was doing that anyway? Or is it because, gee, I'm feeding it like orange juice? So I appreciate your thoughts on that link.
Definitely. This is a fascinating facet of microbiome research. I read this book called The Psychobiotic Revolution. I can't recommend that enough. Psychobiotic is a term for basically microbes that can influence our brain chemicals, our brain chemistry, okay? So our moods. And what they found is like, they just cite study after study after study of like, you know, communities that had like a water contamination with a bacteria or like a big bacterial infection outbreak. And then later they see like cases spike for like severe clinical depression. So there's all kinds of studies, and they do mice models. So, you know, in doing different bacterial variables in mice and noticing the different outcomes of anxiety, depression. And so they've made the correlations over and over. I think for me, like the major anxiety, depression was because of a change in my microbiome. I had been through a really stressful, emotionally stressful period of my life. And that probably just change the environment in my gut, which made the microbiome change. Anytime we don't have a hospitable environment in our own terrain, in our gut, that can change our microbiome. And so I think that's what was that's how I fell off the cliff. And yeah, after that, I just noticed, the anxiety was out of control. And it was very swingy, anxiety, depression. They have found also that, our microbiome can synthesize neurotransmitter-like chemicals. They're not clear on like if they synthesize them and they go to our brain and actually just replace neurotransmitters. Like, they're not clear, but they know that bacteria. We still just don't know. So we don't know. We've barely scratched the surface of what these symbiotes in our body can do. But they have found that they synthesize neurotransmitter-like chemicals. So, and our gut's connected to our brain via the vagus nerve. So there is a highway, you know, there's an ability for whatever is created in your gut to get to your brain. So there's just a lot of like little bits of evidence. That's what I can offer right now as to the links that science has made.
Cool. Thank you, Angelica. I appreciate you sharing on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just hopeful if you are suffering from mood disorders. I think it's just really hopeful to know that, like, it's not your fault. Like, you're not broken. Like, you don't need to go to a psychologist and go on anti-anxiety medication. That's the whole premise of this book, The Psychobiotic Revolution. That's their whole thing, is like, let's get people off of mood regulating drugs. Like, let's look at the microbiome. So I'll try to put that in the chat too, because it's a great book.
And Ronnie has a hand up.
Awesome.
Go ahead, Ronnie. Unmute.
So if we bring it back home, hey, Jenny, if you're still there, wait, ask those questions, because some of them were, I was kind of curious. I was curious about that instrument as well. So it's like, oh yeah, so somebody else asked those questions. Sprouts, can you talk about how they compare nutrition compared to lettuce and this sort of thing? Like, because that's something everybody can do. And maybe you can just do 2 minutes of how to sprout. It's pretty easy. Everybody's mm-hmm. got enough stuff at home. You could sprout right now. Mm-hmm. But just, and it's like, for me, I get organic seeds, but I don't get the sprouting seeds that cost 10 times as much as the organic lentils or seeds, which just seems like crazy. But anyway, maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, my understanding is that, so a seed like contains all the potential of like a mature plant. So that's pretty powerful. But seeds also come with some baggage, right? They have some anti-nutrients, some things that bind to minerals in our bodies. So like, that's why soaking at least seeds and nuts is preferable to remove some of those things, but there's a lot of nutrition packed in there. They're very high in protein and carbs and good vitamins and minerals. Now, when you sprout, though, that suddenly like creates and it wakes up a bunch of enzymes, right? So when we sprout a seed like in a jar and just create a little tail, that's like the first level of sprouting. You're all of a sudden there's all these live and active enzymes. It's great to ingest those because they enhance our own existing digestive enzymes. So that's really good. I don't know specifically, but I know it creates new vitamins that don't exist in that raw seed. Like when you get a little sprout tail, it is converted and it has created like new vitamins. So that's exciting. It lessens the protein though. So like a seed or a nut or a legume, just in its raw form, really dense in protein. But as you sprout more and more, like it, that will lessen. So I wish I had specific nutrients.
You went really gurgly there. Are you saying to use them when the sprout is small or larger?
Yeah. So there's different stages have different benefits, right? So the little sprout you grow, like the little tail you grow, that's awesome because you've already created nutrition that wasn't in the original seed or pulse or lentil or nut. So that's great. You're creating new vitamins, you're creating enzymes, and you're lessening the protein. Still high in protein, and then when you do like a bigger one, like a microgreen, so that's going to require a little more root development. That's going to get a little higher. Then you're developing chlorophyll, and it continues, I think, to change the nutrient profile. So I think like both it's like good to do both. I just love microgreens because you could spend an arm and a leg on organic greens in the store. They come in a big plastic tub, which is like a lot of waste. And they're probably from California and like they've been in cold storage for 10 days or something. So that's why I like the microgreens, because it gives me that like green, fresh fix. But yeah, I think like whatever you can sprout is a good idea. I just consume microgreens personally. I don't
sprout. So, you know, what happens when you don't get the sprout? Like if I always soak nuts if I'm going to use them. Mm-hmm. On walnuts, almonds, sunflower seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, I have yet to see a sprout. Okay. Like how long do I need to soak them for?
So that's a tricky one. A lot of our nuts and seeds, most are pasteurized. So it's like if they're pasteurized, they've been treated with heat, that's probably a reason why they're not sprouting for you. That's a toughie. Or if they're, but if they're like
almonds,
raw,
almonds are pasteurized.
Yeah.
Unless you can get them.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna find out.
Almonds are pasteurized unless you specifically find them. But it's kind of like sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds. Like, are they also pasteurized? Like, that's something I haven't heard about.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good
almonds,
question.
Yeah.
I should ask. So the farm I work for has a raw vegan cafe, and they're sprouting their nuts and seeds too. So I will ask them, like, what's the trick to that? There might be other things involved in the processing of that ingredient that will reduce its sprouting capacity when you bring it home and you try to sprout it. There, you know, there may be some factors there that are like taking away its, some of its life force or ability to continue to grow like that. Yeah, so I'll find out and I'll try to post in the.
So then I wonder. Then I wonder if soaking is of any value at all. Like, it's like, am I really sprouting this, or am I just?
It is
soaking.
It is because you're removing some of the.
Am I getting rid of any?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Like, so the seed plants have come equipped with certain protection or armor to help them survive and continue their species out in the wild, right? So that's why, the downside to that is that we ingest them and they can, they can bind minerals and do not so nice things, or they can create like an immune reaction in people. Like, think like nightshades, you know, like that plant was given something to protect itself in nature, but some people who are really immune reactive, they're reacting to the alkaloids in those nightshades. So not everyone does, but like some people will. So yes, by soaking, you're at least removing those phytates, those things. And if you don't get the little sprout, I'm gonna do a little bit of detective work on this. Cause yeah, it is, there's something about seeing that and knowing, oh, okay, like this is a healthy food. Like this is doing, this is giving me its full nutrition potential. Yeah.
That would be awesome. I've often wondered about that. I don't even know how to look for that, but yeah, if you've got any answers on that, yes, and please tag me on it, because I would like to see. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see what's written on that. Anyway, thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah.
To me, that subject's so interesting.
You super like important. The sprouting of food?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Good to see you. Again,
I like
Ronnie.
The yeah. I
you spoke gave, you gave me a project.
Subject, your subject. Yeah. The subject matter is really interesting to me. Good job. Keep farming.
Yeah.
thank you. I love it. I don't think I'm gonna. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
Have you heard of Coco's pulse testing?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. I put the name of it in chat. It's a way to test food sensitivities in the moment without having to spend all the money on the tests.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I usually tell people to start with that because it's free. You take a full pulse for a minute, note that number, put the food or the beverage in your mouth, hold it for a minute, then do another full 1 minute. And if you go up or down more than 10 pulse beats, heartbeats, then you can have that food or that drink right now. Maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, but not right now. So it's an easy free way.
Mm-hmm.
Food sensitivity.
Yeah. That's like a finer, I think, control, which I've like kind of like muscle testing, and I've never really gotten on board with it, but yeah, I mean, that's like, I think that's like a even finer like way to determine if you should be eating something in the moment. Like, let's say you bought a whole like week's worth of local great produce, and then you pulse test it and your body says no. I'm like, well, wait a minute. So
yeah, it's just, maybe it's something on that leaf or you know that piece of fruit. It doesn't mean everything you bought is bad, and maybe because you can't, maybe something's going on today, but it doesn't mean tomorrow. You might test fine tomorrow,
right? Totally.
So
totally, I think that's like Jedi level, like individualized nutrition.
I always recommend it because it's free.
Totally. Yeah. I just, I said the food sensitivity piece of testing, and it's, yeah, it is really expensive. But I think for like 3 years, I just struggled with like special diet after special diet after special diet. And like, I'll feel good for a little while, but like, see, if you have a gut issue, like if you have leaky gut, it doesn't matter what you eat, you're eventually going to become sensitive to what you're eating.
Right. And it's out in your blood system if you have a leaky gut. So you're going to test that it's aggravates. So anyway.
Right. So it's just like, I got my hopes up and I got let down so many times by following diets. I'm like, this is going to be the thing. This is going to be the thing that's going to make me feel better. So I'm just like, I've got kind of just come to a new fork in the road where I'm like, I'm going to advocate for food sensitivity testing just to like save you time and stress and anxiety about like eliminating food and worrying, being paranoid about food. That's really like why I did it. I don't want to be anxious anymore. I just want data. I just want the data. Like,
yeah. You got to find Angelica's diet. So we have about three, four minutes left. Any quick questions before we go? Speak now, forever hold your peace.
Yeah, you can tag me on the Facebook group.
It looks like Jenny has something, but like I said, we only have a couple minutes, so go.
If your sprouts aren't on soil, you're not drawing anything from the soil, I'm assuming. Could you talk to that a bit?
Yeah, actually, I can. So you guys have all heard of Ann Wigmore, right? Who started the Hippocrates, right? Mm-hmm. She started the whole wheatgrass. She like made wheatgrass and raw food really big in the U.S. So apparently she, like for the longest time, sprouted things on newspaper, like grew microgreens and wheatgrass on newspaper. So yeah, it's kind of like Martha's hydroponics thing. You don't necessarily need that much soil or nutrition to create a microgreen. Because see, that seed already has so much potential in it, right? So kind of like the minimum it needs is sunlight, air, and water to get going. But we plant our microgreens in soil because we do it as a business. And so it's like, we want to make sure we're getting consistent yield. And so like, we found that using soil helps us maintain consistency and stuff. So I can't speak to the hydroponic or no soil methods, but like, you're still going to get nutrition. Like I said, I think like, if we just figure out how can I get the most nutritious food, like whether it's growing, you know, in a container, in a hydroponic container, like, or if it's sprouting things without soil at all, I say like, that's better than buying a tub of lettuce that's 10 days old, you know, that's probably lost a lot of its nutrients in the grocery store, even if it's organic. I just think that nutrient density is where we need to be thinking.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but that's an interesting question though. Like, what would be the difference? You guys are giving me all kinds of little like food for thought, like things I want to go ask my colleagues about. Like, what is the difference between a microgreen, a sprout with soil versus no soil?
I heard you can't get sunflower sprouts without soil. Is that, will they sprout without soil? Do you know?
I haven't tried it personally. We do grow sunflower greens in our operation. We use like a tiny bit, like really, like you could use a half inch of soil. They don't need a lot.
Cool. Well, thank you all for being here. Angelica, thank you. I really enjoyed it. It's fun being on a call with you again.
Yeah, thank you all for being such a gracious audience and letting me share my passion. I hope it was helpful, and I'm definitely going to ask Ronnie and Jenny's questions and add more to follow up the discussion.
Cool. Thank you so much. Have a good evening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.